Based on recent announcements from pharmaceutical companies working to develop a vaccine for the novel coronavirus, it appears that widespread vaccinations will likely begin in 2021. One of the outstanding questions surrounding the distribution of a vaccine is whether it should be mandatory, especially in cases where people work directly with at-risk populations. To discuss the idea of vaccine mandates, we spoke Wednesday afternoon to Mary Beth Morrissey, chair of the New York State Bar Association's Health Law Section COVID-19 Task Force. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you so much, Dave. Delighted to be with you this afternoon.
So it appears that the resolution that the Bar Association came down with basically endorses the idea that once there's a safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine, you believe that the state should consider mandating a vaccine if vaccinations are also deemed scientifically necessary. Is that an accurate characterization? And if so, how did the Bar Association reach that conclusion?
Well, if I may, Dave, step back a moment
Sure.
and try to put the vaccine recommendation in the context of the larger set of comprehensive recommendations that the task force developed starting in March and then working through several months before we had the opportunity to submit the first set of recommendations to the New York State Bar Association House of Delegates, which is the association's governing body, in June. And then we went back to the House of Delegates in November. So turning to the recommendations and resolutions themselves, there are three main resolutions that the task force developed. The first one really addresses what I would call structural legal reforms for New York to address gaps in the law. In 2008, the Public Health Law Committee, of which I'm a co-chair, did a gap analysis with professors at Columbia University of the public health laws in New York, and major gaps were identified. And so we have been really working on these recommendations, these structural legal reforms, for some time. Resolution one of the of the full set of recommendations identifies three recommendations in particular. One is enactment of a State Health Emergency Powers Act. The second is adoption of crisis standards of care, which are needed when there is a public health emergency and disruption of normal healthcare operations. And the last one is resource allocation guidelines, sometimes called triage guidelines, when there are scarce resources on the ground. And as we understand from our physician colleagues and other practitioners in the New York provider systems, there was such a scarcity during the pandemic. And then the second resolution addresses the needs of vulnerable populations, including persons with disabilities, older adults, persons who are incarcerated, homeless persons. I can't identify all the populations, but we really call for recognition and honoring of the human rights of all vulnerable persons, prioritizing funding for these populations. And of course, I think everybody is well aware at this point that the pandemic has had a disproportionate impact on people in communities of color. So obviously, we want to make sure that any steps we take at the state level are addressing the unmet needs of people in communities of color. And I will point out, Dave, if I may, that the pandemic has only worsened conditions of inequity that existed prior to the pandemic. So that's the big picture, really leading up to the third resolution, which is a recommendation of a decisional structure, we would call it, for the state to look at in assessing whether or not a vaccine would be necessary. And as you pointed out, we identified a number of things that would have to happen before any action would be taken by the state. Certainly a determination that any vaccine, such as the Pfizer and the Moderna, are safe and effective. Secondly, that there has been adequate public education to encourage public uptake, and that, of course, should be, you know, already underway and really developed to be sensitive to communities, culturally and linguistically sensitive educational programs. And then, of course, an assessment of the level of immunization in particular communities and whether a mandate, you know, would be necessary. So I hope I've given you some sense of both the big picture recommendations and how that last recommendation for a decisional structure in considering a vaccine mandate fits in to the bigger context, Dave.
Is there any sort of precedent for a requirement, a mandate on this type of scale?
Well, first of all, let me clarify. When you say scale, we're really guided by, and when I say we, I mean the state and the public health authorities are really guided by existing law, and the authority of the state to regulate public health is well established in constitutional law, including vaccine mandates, going back to a decision in 1905, the Jacobson decision. And of course, there have been other decisions, you know, since then that also uphold the authority of the state and public health authorities to mandate vaccines. And this particular recommendation would be fashioned along the lines of what we already have in New York. As you may know, and as our listeners may know, we have a number of well entrenched public health protocols and vaccine mandates in New York, including for child care programs, schools, colleges and universities, and healthcare workers. And so this type of policy has been institutionalized in much of our ordinary life. And I do want to make clear that we are not in any way recommending consideration of a vaccine that would be compulsory or would involve forcible bodily violation. Any individual would be absolutely free to refuse vaccination. And of course, as it works now with existing mandates, there may be consequences for such a decision to refuse a vaccine, such as parents may not be able to send their children to school. The children may be excluded from participation in classes until they are vaccinated. The same for college and university students. And there may be consequences as well for healthcare workers who refuse to take a vaccine. I should bring to your attention that Richard Gottfried, the chair of the Assembly Health Law Committee, has recently introduced a bill. And as I understand the bill, I have not had the opportunity to speak with the Chair Gottfried or any of his staff, but as I understand the bill, it would mandate vaccines in long-term care facilities for residents and the healthcare workers in those facilities. But Chair Gottfried has written into the bill a medical exception as well as a religious and personal exception that could be exercised by either a resident or a healthcare worker.
What do you think of the merits of a religious exemption to a COVID-19 vaccine, like in that circumstance you just described, especially considering in 2019, New York eliminated the religious exemption for school vaccine requirements?
Well, speaking on behalf of the New York State Bar Association, I would you know, take the position that is consistent with the report and resolutions, and that is that the there is no constitutional authority for free exercise in this context, and the courts have rejected any challenges on that basis. And so the key decision here is a decision called Employment Division v. Smith, which held that if a law is neutral and generally applicable, then it does not discriminate against particular religious faith or religious practices. It has a secular purpose, And that's exactly what we would see here if there were a vaccine mandate. It would have the secular purpose of protecting the public health, preventing the spread of the virus. And, you know, quite frankly, Dave, I think given what we're seeing with the rise now again this fall in the number of cases across the country, I think the epicenter has moved from New York to the Midwest at the present time. And the steps that are being taken to lock down certain communities and certain places where people congregate, it would seem that the vaccine would be viewed as liberating and avoiding some of these more restrictive measures. And the law does require, by the way, that in mandating a vaccine, that it be the least restrictive measure. And certainly I think that there is ample evidence that a vaccine mandate would be the least restrictive path to protecting the public health at this point in time, given, you know, what we're seeing.
If the governor or the legislature, in conjunction with the governor, decided to initiate some sort of vaccine mandate, say for healthcare workers, how much deference would the state government have in that situation in determining, you know, what was a public health crisis and whether the vaccine was the right remedy? For instance, could someone simply say, you know, I'm going to adhere to social distancing and wear a mask, and that's a safer alternative? Is that kind of a less restrictive or less cumbersome remedy that someone could sort of offer as an alternative and thus get around a potential mandate?
Well, I think that if the state enacted through the legislature a vaccine mandate, then, you know, it would depend on what that looked like. Historically, the regulation of the public health occurs at the local level. So, for example, as we saw last year with the measles crisis, there was a mandate for a measles vaccine for children in New York State, and the New York City took certain steps to exclude children who were not vaccinated from participation in school, and that was upheld. So, again, the local public health authorities are always involved in a fact-specific assessment of the threat to a particular community, even if there is a statewide mandate. There can be certain steps that the public health authorities take to help carry out that mandate.
Is it possible, considering the evolving nature of a pandemic, that the threshold for requiring a vaccine through some sort of mandate could change moving forward? You know, if we have, you know, like we're seeing now, an outbreak again, that there's more of a case to make that public health emergency crisis case and invoking those powers, as opposed to, say, if someone had tried to impose a vaccine this summer when, you know, the virus seemed to be receding from life?
Well, I think, Dave, and I hope most of our listeners will agree that we are witnessing an unprecedented pandemic that we have not seen in our lifetime. And I think we can say with assurance that the threat to the public health is, again, something that we have not seen, you know, in the last 100 years. So I think there is a significant threat to the public health. And certainly, there is always, as I've mentioned, a fact-specific assessment of that threat in communities and an assessment by the public health authorities and scientists of whether there is a sufficient level of immunization in a particular community. So, again, there is some fluidity, and there is always the space and legal authority for those local public health officials to carry out those assessments.
Whenever a vaccine for the novel coronavirus does become available, do you plan on getting vaccinated as soon as you can?
I and my husband and five adult children, all plan to get the vaccine. We have confidence based upon the data that we have seen to date that the Pfizer vaccine, which now is reported today, a 95% vaccination rate, and the Moderna also, I believe, a 95% vaccination rate. So we have confidence given all the levels of review, both at the federal government, the FDA, the CDC, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices to the CDC. And then here in New York, Governor Cuomo has also put into place a review process. So that will be our personal decision, yes.
Well, we've been speaking with Mary Beth Morrissey. She is chair of the New York State Bar Association's Health Law Section COVID-19 Task Force. Mary Beth, thank you so much for making the time and lending your legal expertise to the show.
Dave, thank you so much. My pleasure.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.